This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
Hello, and welcome to Colloquium. This is Dylan. I have with me Nick.
Hey, I'm Nick. I'm here, yeah, as usual.
This is Nick. He's here. And we also have a guest with us here to talk about a project called More Than Entertained that Nick has started, as well as Brennan, our guest here. And we're really excited to talk about this theme. It's close to our hearts. It's a project that, honestly, I'm surprised that we haven't talked about until now, because it's definitely come up a lot. But we're just now turning it into a podcast.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this topic. Yeah, I think I've been trying to, Dylan's the boss, so I've been trying to put it in his ear for, several months now, and he keeps pushing it away for some reason, but finally I convinced him that we're just gonna do this topic, so let's make it happen.
Yeah, so we're doing it, here we are. And we have with us Brennan Garrix. Is that how you say your last name? Brennan mm-hmm. Garrix, yes.
That's a good first try.
Yeah, I may or may not have done my research.
he simply asked me how to pronounce it, and I told him.
Yeah. So Brennan is a current focus missionary. Nick and I are both former missionaries. Brennan is still currently a missionary. He's working on Focus's summer projects at the moment. But he also is the one of the brains behind this More Than Entertained. So I just want to give Brennan a chance to introduce himself, tell us a little bit about what he does. And obviously Nick is involved, so Nick will speak to it a little bit as well. But Brennan, thanks for being on the show with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited. Also a topic very near and dear to my heart too. So,
right on. Yeah, so I guess we just want to start off with talking about what exactly we've used this word phrase a few times now, but More Than Entertained. What does it mean? What is More Than Entertained?
Yeah, well, so More Than Entertained is the name of, I guess, our project is probably the best word to call it right now. Our project right now, it's just a blog website, essentially. And the idea is that secular entertainment, so movies, music, books, sports moments, plays, TV shows, whatever, you know, paintings, can be used to lift us to the divine. Like, there's more than just mere entertainment that can happen when we consume media. And so right now for the blog, me and a couple of other people who do More Than Entertained with me and Nick will write posts, reflections we call them, every week on times when we encountered the divine in entertainment, when we saw truth, goodness, and beauty, seeds of the word, the gospel message, and we write about them, write how we were lifted, so that hopefully other people can begin to view media through the same lens, and hopefully to prompt them to actually take time to reflect on the media they consume.
Yeah, and for our listeners, the website, so more than it's just morethanentertained.com, we'll definitely have it in the show notes and everything. But it's I've told Nick this. I don't know if I told you. I think I've told you this at one point, Brennan. But it's a really well designed website. It looks awesome. The articles are incredible. It looks very professional. So I love visiting it. I've read a lot of articles from that. I've shown it to my students. My students seem to like it. So it's really want to encourage you guys to check that out after listening to this. It's a pretty solid website. But also wanted to ask you guys, and apparently Nick is the mastermind behind this, which yes. I didn't know. I underestimated him.
Big brain.
But, I'm kind of, that's what the kids say, actually.
That's what they say.
but I wanted to ask you what was like, what sparked this? How did this More Than Entertained come to be?
Sure, yeah, and I don't want to credit it just to my own, you know, personal discovery of this sort of project. You know, I think it was a few of us coming together that was on, you know, it was on, you know, all of our hearts,
yeah,
and we
yeah.
came together.
You can be humble, it's fine.
Oh yeah, it was all me. No, but I think what it kind of stems from is actually just a you know, a personal testimony about how I encountered Jesus in secular entertainment, you know, and maybe I'll use just a couple of examples that really just kind of moved me and sparked me on this path of using entertainment to share the gospel or to reach people who are otherwise away from the gospel. But I think my first real powerful example of this was when I actually sat down, 2012, I think the movie was released, The Dark Knight Rises. Mm. It's the third movie in the Dark Knight trilogy, which was wildly popular, you know. And I remember sitting down in the movie theater, and for those that have seen it, you know, there's I think all of us have seen it here, right? There's that scene where Christian Bale, Batman, is like, he's in the, you know, the hell on earth prison, you know, way down in the cage or whatever, in that big hole in the middle of nowhere. And there's that scene where he, you know, climbs out of that, that hole, that prison on his own, and, you know, goes forth and you know, travels to Gotham and saves the city. But that particular scene, I just remember being very moved by it in the theater, like tears coming to my eyes and just getting like really emotional. And that was kind of before I was really seriously Catholic Christian. I just, you know, knew the Lord, but I was, you know, not all in at that point, you know. I just remember being very moved by it. And actually come to find out later, I've discovered that that movie is a very, very direct Christian allegory. There's like, especially, it's particularly within that scene, that's a very, you know, Christ-like allegory scene, you know, where he kind of rises out of the pit of hell and, you know, like Jesus descending into hell and then, you know, coming out of hell and, you know, coming to save the city of man, you know, which is Gotham. It was a very, very Christian, you know, direct, you know, Christ allegory scene. And I just had an experience of being very moved by that before I knew it related to Christ.
Yeah.
Which kind of spoke to me that, oh, my heart is made for that. You know, right. My heart is made for an encounter with Christ. That's actually the way my heart is wired. Because my heart reacted before I, you know, before I knew it was Christ.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful experience. I think of movies like that that I've seen as well. And we can get more into this in a little bit, but where kind of you just realize the surface level at first, and then later it hits you, like what was really going on with the message there. But Brendan, I wanted to ask you as well, what was it about hearing about this project that was like, yeah, I want in on that?
Yeah, well, so Nick kind of organized me, him, and our friend Emma Stanley, who also was a co-founder, last summer. Actually, probably almost exactly a year ago today, we got together in Boulder, Colorado. And Nick, I mean, as far as I can recall, was just like, hey, we're all pretty passionate about the same thing, and we all have this similar love for the entertainment industry and like finding Christ in it. So what if we did something about it together? And Nick had already had... You had your website, Nick. I forgot what you called it, where you would occasionally comment on different...
A little personal blog.
Yeah, a little personal blog. Where you did stuff like this and wanted to make it bigger and bring a couple other people into it, I thought, which... So, but the reason that it got me so excited when he brought this up is because of that kind of some of the stuff that Nick was talking about. My whole life, you know, way before I knew the Lord or wanted to pursue him, I was always fascinated by that ache that I would get in my chest after finishing a good movie or a good book or a good TV show. And I always just like get blown away at how the authors or writers of these, you know, works of these stories could help like get me so attached to these characters who I knew were fictional. Like, why did I care so much about these people who I knew were fake, and why are they, what they're doing or not doing or their face? Why is it stirring in me such a, like, just like an explosion in my heart, basically. And so I was always fascinated by that. And then as I've been having, you know, just my deeper conversion over the last 4 or so years, becoming more and more aware that ache or that experience that I have within me is an encounter with beauty. And then that encounter with beauty is calling me out of myself, calling me higher, calling me to Jesus. And so I, you know, as my eyes have been opened to recognize him, that's one of kind of our, I guess, foundational verses, Luke 24:31. I've just been really excited to help other people figure out like, what's that ache in my chest and what is it calling me to? Why is that there?
See, so use that word ache. It sounds like some Christopher West language there.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher West, he talks about that a lot in Theology of the Body, like that ache we have, that often we encounter in pop culture, right? He talks about Bruce Springsteen a lot, as somebody who helped him as a young person discover like that desire for something greater that things on earth can only begin to fulfill. But that as he matured and got older and grew in his faith, he realized that desire was, that ache was a desire for God. So I think that's really powerful. And it gets into kind of where I want to go as well of what is it about, because we see these things in pop culture all the time. These things that inspire us, these things that encourage us, these things that awaken something in us. So what is it about, why do you think pop culture can actually be a powerful force in helping people encounter the gospel and even evangelize as well?
Yeah, maybe I'll start that off. We've got several things here, and but I think one of the biggest things, and I think Brennan and I can agree on, probably Dylan too, is that just this encounter with beauty is I want to say very non-confrontational. Like just everyone, basically everyone in our culture is encountering, you know, various forms of entertainment, movies probably being the biggest one, movies and music, and are loving it. They're out there, they're enjoying the entertainment. They're, you know, everyone has that ache in their heart that they experience after watching the latest Marvel movie or whatever it might be, or the TV series, you know, of, oh gosh, I wish that was my story, or I wish I was more like whatever is being portrayed in that movie, you know, so on and so forth. So it's so non-confrontational in the way that everyone is engaging in it, and kind of a what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a, yeah, I guess non-confrontational is the best word. Yeah, it doesn't lead to argument.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's something approachable about it. And I think, I don't know, Brennan, you were kind of telling us a little bit about just kind of your experience of watching maybe movies in particular, I think, watching movies with people, whether it's students you work with as a missionary or other missionaries, and kind of using that as a springboard for conversation. So how has that proved effective for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the really cool thing about encountering beauty, about being exposed to a really good story, is that it will strike us all in different ways depending on our circumstances and our past experiences. I heard this talk one time where the speaker said that the really cool thing about beauty is, like, if the three of us all saw a really beautiful sunset, we would have potentially three different reactions. Like, maybe I would look at it and say, oh, I need to go to confession. And, you know, Nick would look at it and say, like, oh, I need to, you know, marry that girl. And then Dylan would look at it and say, oh my gosh, like, I'm so small. And like, and that sun is so big. And so just based off of our personal experience. So I love hearing what everyone has to say. I actually just did this last night. We watched The Secret Life of Walter Mitty with a group of probably about 15 of us or so. And, you know, I did the classic Nick question that he asked after me. He said, what did you notice? And, you know, just led to 20 or 30 minutes of conversation, and just seeing the different things that people noticed, and then asking, like, okay, well, why did that stand out to you? Or why were you struck by that? And then have them, you know, reflecting on, okay, well, yeah, maybe, you know, it's not necessarily like prayer per se, but it's like, it can be used as inspiration for prayer. And so it's like, yeah, why did this stand out for me? And to like help people to consider the truth or the goodness that this is calling me to. Because I think, yeah, beauty invites us to consider, like, what is the way of life that makes this possible goodness? Or and then what's the way of thought that, like, makes this so attractive, truth? And so it extends an invitation to us to consider those things. And so I like that, because it doesn't force you. It's not, like Nick said, confrontational. It's an invitation. And we can either say yes or no to consider, what this beauty is calling us to.
Yeah, it seems like someone said this to me once, that especially when in discerning the Lord's will, it's, you know, there's like this balance that you have to weigh of push and pull. You know, if you feel like you're being pushed towards something, then that seems to be oftentimes not of the Holy Spirit, when you're being like forced or pushed towards something. Mm-hmm. But when you're being kind of pulled towards something in kind of an inviting way, mm-hmm. that seems to be of the Holy Spirit. So I love how beauty does that to us, you know, and using the secret life of Walter Mitty as an example. I know before the podcast, us three were talking about that movie and how, you know, we've been kind of impacted by it in whatever way, and how, you know, each of us were kind of pulled towards some truth, you know, in whatever sense. So,
yeah. Okay. Brent, yeah. Can you hear us okay?
I can. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay, great. Yeah. Your face just disappeared, but as long as we can hear you, it's
okay, yeah. Yeah. I think a really like cool experiences when I know that I have just encountered something beautiful is when I finish, and I would say typically a movie or a book series that I really like, and I get done and I'm just sitting there kind of arrested by beauty, which is a phrase that Nick loves for sure, and I also love it, but just kind of sitting there and sitting in that ache and thinking, like, there is something more to do than just like watch another movie or to dive back into like another book or to like escape reality again. Like there's, I remember one time last summer I had watched a couple episodes of a TV show and had this experience. And I remember I was like warming up my leftover pasta and I was like, man, there's something greater to be doing right now than just warming up these noodles, you know? And, and I like the way that beauty, yeah, like gets me thinking about, like what is the immediate call for me in my life? Like, I feel like, you know, we ought to, when we escape reality and, you know, books, music, movies, whatever, it's so that we can be thrust back into reality with a more keen sense of the greatness that we were made for. And so, yeah, I remember in January watching Clouds. It's a Disney Plus original. It's very emotional, so maybe that's one reason I was so moved and stirred. But anyways, watch Clouds. And I remember after I was having this experience of like, oh man, there's something like that this is calling me to. And it turned out that I think it was for me to like write letter. I've been meaning to write an apology letter to something mean that I said to my dad, you know, a few weeks before. And so that's what I ended up doing, because I was like, there's something here. Like, what is this calling me to? What's like the greatness that I'm being asked to give myself to in response to this encounter with beauty? And then it turned out I ended up writing letters to, you know, the rest of my family too. And it was a really prayerful exercise for me. And then I hopefully, you know, impactful for them to get these letters from me. So.
Right. More than noodles. I really like that. Maybe that could be a title of a book or something.
Yeah. I'm gonna rename our website.
More than noodles.
That's funny. Yeah. I love what you had to say there about just how Dylan says I'm supposed to turn into the mic. What?
Yeah, just talking.
Just
to the
go.
Mic.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. Thanks. I love what you had to say there. That's it.
Okay. Great. well said.
Thank you.
I think what I wanted, a question that always comes up with this for me, because I think especially among missionaries, you know, we were all folks missionaries, and it's really easy at times to watch, you know, a movie, even if it's not like not even explicitly about the gospel or anything. But like when you're praying a holy hour every day and going to mass and all you're thinking about is evangelization and living out the gospel, it's so easy to see the gospel in everything, right?
And that.
But I'm curious what you guys experience with is, does this also have the potential, I think, to transform people who maybe aren't living it out every day? Does it have that same, is it just as powerful of an encounter, and does it have the same potential for non crazy people, I guess?
Gosh, that's an awesome question. Yeah, Nick, do you want to go first?
I'll try it. Yeah. Well, I think though, so again, just to repeat, like my personal experience with you know, being encountered by the gospel and entertainment, in kind of a way where I wasn't expecting it. And that ties directly to your question of, you know, when I was watching The Dark Knight, I had an experience of being just very moved by The Dark Knight without, you know, really being directly looking for it or trying to see the gospel and everything. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
I was still in college. I was young. I was maybe
still
a sophomore.
Pagan.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I had an experience of being moved. It was only till later where I was, you know, more disposed toward contemplation that I was able to kind of see and, you know, have a name to my encounter with the Lord, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you're right. There's so many people in our secular culture that have this ache. They do have the ache. I won't say they don't have the ache, because I think they do, you know, when they encounter a movie like that or, and they feel it in their soul after the movie, like, gosh, there's something in there. But then it's just like, oh, well. And they go on, they eat their meal after the movie and they go to sleep or whatever. And that's it. They forget about it. Good movie. You know, there's no, you know, fleshing out of what they should be contemplating, you know? So you're right. There's something that we need to cultivate, I think, as evangelists of, no, that thing that you felt before the movie, here's what that is. You know, so there is an action that's required, I think, you know, for us as evangelists to, you know, to come back and call out what these people who aren't contemplate had experienced, you know, so I think that's the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is one of like the points of our website is to like prompt reflection on the divine entertainment, and probably particularly for some of these people who, like you said, maybe aren't really practicing the faith or Christian or whatever, or maybe just lukewarm. And to echo what Nick said, I think that's the human experience. I don't think that's the necessary, I mean, maybe Christians are more awakened to the ache and what that's calling us to, of course, and all that. But I think the human experience is when we encounter beauty, we get some sort of like ache, some some sort of nostalgic, mm-hmm. painful type of feeling in our heart. And so I think to draw attention to that, to some of these people who aren't maybe going to church on Sunday or whatever, is a big point of what we're doing. And I think that I really like how if people aren't going to church and they might not, you know, say yes, if you invite them to go to church, they might not say yes to that. But if you can present them the gospel through the context of their favorite story, then they might listen. If you can say, hey, yeah, you really love Remember the Titans. You know, why do you think you love it so much? And just start to like get them thinking a little bit about and recalling maybe that ache that they experienced whenever the last time they watched it was, and say, oh, you know, I love it because of, you know, the underdog story, or I love it because of, you know, like how black people and white people come together and like the unity made for relationship, whatever. And as we start to get them reflecting on these things, you know, the greatest stories that we consume today and in our pop culture are like, you know, going to all have like seeds or like the reflections ever pull from the greatest story of all time, you know, which is like the Bible, the gospel. And so to connect for them the seeds of these words, the seeds of the word that they see in pop culture with like the story is like a big goal of More Than Entertained, I think. And I think that is what we want to do. Want to awaken these people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of like that desire to, right, that kind of emotional experience, that powerful kind of encounter we have with things in pop culture, you know, often movies. I think it's the desire's there for everyone, right? The ache is there. It's almost about what do you fill it with, right? You know? So some people might stop at the movie itself, right? And it's like, okay, that's a really awesome movie, right? But not allow it to transform them, not allow it to move them past the movie, right? You saw something that's beautiful, right? Well, you know, we believe as Christians in a very particular way that the beauty we encounter on earth is but a reflection of the beauty of God, right? And so I think there is a way in which it can be an even more powerful experience for someone who believes that, right? Someone who believes that even that beautiful thing that you just encountered, that's not all there is. There's more. And that's where I think like our Christian perspective can speak into that especially. And then I think even just like maturity too. Because I think there are a lot of things where like, you know, a lot of movies that I saw as a child that I found deeper things in later. You know, whether that's, I don't know, Star Wars, or I think of, you know, I think I've talked about this with you guys before, but how my students, I give them an assignment where they write a paper on like a movie or book or song that they think is related to the gospel in some way. And just the things they say are like, it's opened my eyes to movies that I've never thought of seeing the gospel in. I think the most interesting one, or one of the more interesting ones, was like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like, just a movie about kids going into a candy shop, but it just so happens they fall into the deadly sins, and the one who perseveres and the one who doesn't fall into temptation ends up inheriting the factory, you know? Like, there's themes there that I don't know if they're intentional or not, but when your eyes are opened, right, back to your verse from the Road to Emmaus, right? When your eyes are open to the realities, there's a lot you can see.
And I think it's really cool, too, that even people whose eyes maybe aren't open are still telling these stories. You know, most of the people in Hollywood or who are making these movies or writing, you know, these pop songs, or who are writing these books that are, you know, massively successful, they aren't Christian, you know, or they aren't thinking, you know, through the lens of the gospel. Yeah. And yet they're telling these stories that have the gospel message woven all throughout it, you know? And so I think it's just a testament to how much that message, that story, that desire for something outside of this world is written on our hearts.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's such a powerful thing to keep in mind, you know, is just the people that, you know, aren't looking, or actually are looking to not. I mean, there's several people in Hollywood, I think we can say, that are actually looking to preach the anti-gospel, you know, to not share the gospel, you know, directly. And like the fact that their stories still are only footnotes to the great story. You know, and still have themes and seeds of the word, as our mentor Bishop Barron likes to say, you know, in these stories, is testament to the fact that Jesus is real. You know, there's like, I think the biggest theme that has come to me in, you know, my encounters with, you know, the Lord in secular media is just that basic theme is like when I encounter something like that in a movie, and there's a couple like really powerful examples I've had that I just comes into my heart more deeply. Oh my gosh, Jesus is real. Like, this is a real thing. This story is real, and we're living in it, you know? So yeah. I think that's the biggest message that can be, you know, encountered through, you know, these seeds of the word and entertainment is the fact that this story is not fake and not being given to you, you know, fakely. It's a real thing that we're a part of.
Yeah. I want to go through kind of some examples to make this tangible of like, what does that look like? We've alluded to a few, I think already. But I think just so our listeners can, one, get kind of examples, get ideas of maybe things they have seen or have not seen or listened to, that they might want to start in order to kind of experience this for themselves. But maybe, so let's just start with films in particular, movies. I know we mentioned a couple, but can you guys speak to like what that experience like with a particular, I know Nick, you already did, so maybe you can hear from Brennan on this one.
What do you mean?
But of a particular movie that transformed you in that way.
Yeah. So yeah, the one that comes to mind whenever people ask this, and I think this comes to mind more specifically when I think of a particular scene. I like this movie a lot for sure. And it probably is top 10 or 15 or something. I'm very noncommittal, so I'm not going to rank it higher than that. But
one of the top, you know, 100 or 200
top
movies.
100.
Yeah. But this scene, so it's the live action Cinderella from 2015, and I, you know, yeah, really good movie.
Not expecting that.
But yeah, well, right. So neither was I, this scene that I'm about to explain. So, you know, I'd seen probably 6 or 7 other versions of the Cinderella story, you know, throughout my life, because there's a bunch of them. And then I watched this movie for the first time in the fall of this past year. So probably September or something like that. And we're watching it, and you know, the mantra of this Cinderella is, you know, have courage and be kind, and we see her in small ways living this throughout the movie. But then at the very end, when you know Prince Charming has seen her for who she really is, and you know, he still chooses her, and she's walking out of, you know, the stepmother's house with Prince Charming, you know, I think what I wanted her to do, maybe I didn't know this consciously until she did the thing that she did, but what I wanted her to do was maybe like go slap her stepmother in the face, you know, or like give her a little like huff and you know, kind of serves you right type of attitude as she's leaving, like, you know, you got your due. But instead, you know, she turns around and looks at her stepmother kind of sitting defeated on the stairwell, and gosh, and she says, I forgive you. She looks at her stepmother and says, I forgive you. I was blown away when I saw that, because I think it's really crazy too, because I don't think that the audience would have known that we wanted that scene if it hadn't been there. Like, I think if she had just walked out the door, even like if it had just been, you know, she hadn't done something mean, if she had just walked out the door, we would have been like, okay. But the fact that she said, I forgive you, I mean, just so explicitly, like Jesus Christ from the cross, you know, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Mm-hmm. This woman who treated her like, you know, as less than human, and like, you know, verbally abused her, and you know, was always, yeah, just like not recognizing her for the dignity that she has as a daughter of God. And she said, I forgive you. And I was just blown away. And I think, too, one reason I was so blown away is because so many other movies and just pop culture today, like, has kind of what Nick was saying, like the anti-gospel, like the revenge is like kind of drives the plot of a lot of these movies that we watch, you know, and taking matters into my own hand and kind of repaying evil with evil. And so I think I was shocked at how shocked I was. Like, I was like, why am I so like this is the gospel, like this is what this should be what happens, you know, if we're like imitating Christ. Mm-hmm. But I was so shocked, and so I started reflecting on that, and I was like, oh yes, because a lot of the other media that I consume is kind of giving me the opposite message. And so it just also reminded me of the importance of like being familiar with the gospel message and the scriptures, so that I can know more clearly when something is opposed to it.
Yeah, I really like that example, and I think it's more powerful than you might think at the surface, because I think, you know, I think back to, you know, whatever Disney Channel or Nickelodeon shows I watched as a kid. And yeah, obviously they're not, you know, they're not steeped in the gospel by any means. But I think of like some of the things, like I think of a really particular example of like watching kids on these TV shows talk back to their parents. And I would see them do that. And then I'd like try to do the same thing because I thought they were cool. And I would just get in so much trouble. I was like, how does this work for the kids on TV, but not for me, right? So like just subtle ways in which what you take into your mind, especially when you're young, I think, they impact the way you're going to act. They impact the way you see the world, right? So even something as little as that in Cinderella, like the I forgive you, you know, it's easy to dismiss that. It's like, oh yeah, it's cool. It's kind of related to Christ, right? But like that matters, right? What you take in is going to impact you. In every little way in which we see the message of the gospel is a positive impact on the world and everyone who views it, I think.
Amen. It's funny, too, how universal our reaction as human beings is or should be to that scene. You know, like no one, I don't want to say no one, that's a pretty strong term, but most people would look at that, you know, I forgive you scene and go, that's right. That's the right way to act and that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I should act that way. You know, so I think the issue comes with now, like, okay, I've seen that scene. I can't just let it stop. Like we've said multiple times, I think this conversation is I can't stop it there. I have to go, okay, that's the way that I should act. That's the way that I should live. I should forgive in that way. You know, it's funny when we're presented with the gospel and with a truth like that, you know, that everyone goes, that's right. No one's going to say, dang, she should have slapped, you know, like if they're being genuinely honest. Right, they wouldn't say, dang, she should have slapped her stepmother and just walked out, you know? So anyway, I just love the universality of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just the power of the idea of like mercy and forgiveness. And that's actually my example of film was related to that as well. The movie based off a book and a play, but Les Mis, I watched that for the first time in the last 6 to 12 months in like, that movie I was in tears at certain points of it. Cause it's just a story of grace and a story of redemption in a really, really beautifully told way, a really powerful way. So I highly recommend that as well as maybe a more explicit, again, it's not God's Not Dead cheesy Christian movie, but like it's steeped in the gospel. And it's a masterpiece, I think, of Western literature, ultimately the book.
Yeah, Dylan, I think we'd be honored if you would give us like a sample of your favorite song.
Yeah, so I'll just go to music and sing. Do you hear the people sing? So okay. Here I go. Just no. Kidding. I'm not doing that. But Nick, did you, I know you already talked about Dark Knight a little bit. Do you want to add a movie to the list here?
Yeah, maybe just briefly. I think
four more.
Yeah, maybe just six more real quick. No, just briefly. I think the biggest one that comes to mind right now is actually Kung Fu Panda. I guess I know, you're going to laugh. But just over the past few months, you know, and I would say 6 months or so, I have turned, like when I've been having like a rough evening or whatever, I have turned Kung Fu Panda on multiple times. Like literally, I've turned it on. Like that is my default. Like, okay, I'm like feeling bad tonight. I'm going to turn on Kung Fu Panda. Wow. Like seriously, because like just the way that movie brings joy to my soul and my heart, you know, just watching this ridiculous Kung, you know, panda in form of Jack Black, just waltzing around and just bringing joy to these like otherwise somber and overly serious kung fu warriors or whatever. Just making an absolute fool of himself while, you know, at the same time and, you know, bringing wisdom and, you know, joy and peace to the people around him. It's just really inspiring. And it always brings like rest to my soul when I watch it. So
for more information, you can check out Nick's article on More Than Entertained on Kung Fu Panda. Do you remember what it's called?
Yeah. The Untold Power of Wonder and Joy.
Wonder and Joy. Yeah. And I think, The Kung Fu Panda, Po, that's his name, right?
That's right, yeah.
He absolutely exudes wonder and joy. And those are Christian virtues, really, wonder and joy. So,
and I think
it's a good article. Check it out.
And ones that we're not so in touch with in today's culture. So it's probably why it's so impactful for you, Nick, and why I was just getting so excited listening to you talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think in little ways in your own life, Nick, I think you take after your master Po in exuding wonder and joy.
My master Po. My master is a panda.
Nick, I love telling people how you just take normal things and then just make them funny or awesome or dorky.
Dorky, what the heck?
But wonder and joy, you know, like, you know, sometimes the childlike disposition might come across as that, but it's because we don't know how to be childlike. That's why I think it's dorky. Yeah. So my apologies for saying that.
No, you're good. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I think another one I want to talk about is music. I think music is something that probably is it fair to say more than people probably consume more music than they do movies?
I would say content-wise, probably more. Yeah.
So I think music is a real doorway into, I mean, what we consume, it's, what am I trying to say? I was trying to say something profound about a doorway, but I don't know where I was going
to
go with that.
So yeah, so. I think maybe to help you, I think I understand where you're going is like, what we consume in music is going to have a huge influence on who we are and how we think and
yes.
kind of the route we go as human beings. And I think a lot of people don't want to admit that, but what we consume, yeah. the music that we consume very much influences right. our disposition.
It's either a doorway to the divine or it's a doorway to like pure hedonism.
Right. Yeah.
Depending Amen. On what you consume, I think.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to hear more about that, we just had an interview with Father Josh Johnson published on our website. Yeah. And he talks a lot about particularly music and how we can find the sacred and the secular there, but then also how to like note when it might be taking us, you know, down the path of vice.
I'm going to start charging you guys to do an ad for your $5 a mention.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to give a brief, like I was absolutely just, beside myself when he mentioned the song Let Me Love You by Neo. I just thought that was the funniest thing. I was like, listen, there are times like over, you know, like periods over the course of the last past several years where I sing that song. I'm like, is this okay? You could let me, you know, I love that song. Anyway, I was
so basically you got permission by a priest to enjoy your guilty pleasure.
That's exactly right.
Nice. Okay, so other than Let Me Love You, what are some examples of encountering the divine through music?
Go ahead, Brennan. You ready?
Sure. One that is recent for me is actually one that I think, Dylan, you mentioned before we were on that you like Need to Breathe. And so I Want to Remember by Need to Breathe and Carrie Underwood came out probably about a month ago or something. And the reason that one struck me so much is because well, it got me thinking about the fact that like when I listen to any work of art or masterpiece or like movie or book or whatever, it's like it's that artist or that storyteller like kind of channeling a particular moment. And I think so often when I consume media and especially when I like feel that high or the rush or whatever you want to call it from whatever story I'm consuming, I think that that's how my life should be all the time. And I think that is like what real life should be like. And so that's why, you know, so often like Hollywood, like excuse my idea of romantic relationships or whatever. But when I was listening to the song, I Want to Remember, it kind of just brought to my attention that like all these stories are the storytellers channeling that particular moment of inspiration, whether it's like a high or a low. And so life isn't always, you know, that mountaintop high or that like that, you know, deep valley low. But it's really beautiful when an artist can go back to that place, that experience that they had, and then tell a story from that place. And so it just felt like, you know, it just got me excited because it seemed like they were the, you know, Carrie Underwood and Need to Breathe were telling the story of like that night that they want to remember. I can't remember the exact lyrics of the song. And yeah, just like reminded me, it's like life has a lot of those moments, but that's not what life is like all the time. And it was just kind of like a wake up call for me and really helpful actually. And just how I consume media.
Hmm. Yeah. That's so interesting. I mean, two things come to mind. One, take that, Nick. We're talking about Need to Breathe. He said before the show, he's like, yeah, I don't really know much about Need to Breathe, so I don't know if we need to talk about that. Brandon brought it up, so I'm going to go there. But yeah, I love their music. I think it's something, and I think that's a great example of a song that's not, you know, they can be debatably called a Christian band at times, but like that's not a Christian song. You know, it's just a song. But they are, I think in particular in their music, they're in touch with realities of life and reality of the gospels that they express quite beautifully. I think another example in their music, so they have an album, I think it's 2013. It came out as one of their older ones, but called Rivers in the Wasteland. And this album, it has some songs with some biblical themes and it has some songs without biblical themes, but, it struck me actually in the last year or two when I realized where this, like the title of this album came from. And it comes from a verse in Isaiah, where I'm not going to quote it in full, but it's Isaiah 43:9. And he talks about how it's God, you know, saying through the prophet Isaiah that, like, see, I'm doing a new thing. And he says, I will make rivers come into, or I will make rivers in the wasteland, right? So he's talking about the desert and in the exile of Israel, right? And he's going to bring forth rivers, rivers of new life, of new water. So it's just a subtle way where that's like, again, you know, it's not in your face. And that's what I think makes them so effective, right? It's the, what do we say? It's like non-confrontational.
Non-confrontational, yeah.
Yeah. But it puts listeners in tune to those realities of the gospel. And I think, I don't know, there's something about, like, I think of the poets, you know, in like ancient Greece and Rome in particular, like Homer, Virgil. These are like, you know, there was something divine about them. Like they, I think, were seen to have this vision into the divine. And I think that still holds true today. And I think that's why we find music so impactful, is that I think musicians are the modern day poets in a certain way. And they kind of have their heads in heaven, right? They're contemplating. They're contemplating truth, goodness, and beauty. And they're trying to communicate it to us through the work of music, through poetry. So I think there's really something particularly profound about music as a medium.
Beautiful.
Nick, you can go ahead and talk about Penny and Sparrow.
Okay. I'll just briefly mention, yeah, my favorite band, Penny and Sparrow. Y'all, I am, just a couple days ago, I've been like serious fans of Penny and Sparrow. And we're talking like a serious fan of them for the past, I want to say 5 years, maybe, since I was introduced to them when I was in Focus. And, I still listen to them regularly. I mean, literally, guys, like 2 days ago, I was listening to some of their music in the car, and it just was like totally overwhelmed. There's sometimes when I just cannot believe that they exist. Like, I have been that – seriously, I have been that impacted by their music. Like, I don't want to make it too strong, but, like, they are a huge influence on my recent spiritual life, just of any resource, any in general. They are a – just a huge influence on my spiritual life and the way I see my relationship with the Lord. And they've, you know, tied themselves as a secular band. They're not Christian. I think they're Christian men, but they don't tie themselves as a secular band. Their music is just a lot about relationships, like, you know, human relationships between a man and a woman. And, it is just wild to me how easily translatable it is, from, you know, man to woman. And to think about it or pray about that song in the context of the relationship of a man or a woman with the Lord. It moves me so much. And there's just some increasing depth every time I listen to the songs. That's it. That's my monologue about Penny and Sparrow. Thank you for giving me the platform.
Brenner, are you familiar with Penny and Sparrow? Or just through Nick?
I'm familiar with Nick, and so therefore I'm familiar with Penny and Sparrow. I recognize their lyrics are very profound, for sure. I think love like the style or the melody, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah. So they're very slow, like very like slow and contemplative, yeah. I think.
So I will say, again, just to defend myself
defend
here.
My belief.
I didn't say that was a bad thing. I just said slow and contemplative.
You guys can be quiet, okay? No, I'm just kidding. No, I think the one thing I was actually with y'all when I listened to them just through the iPhone or whatever. But when I went to see them in concert, I think that is a new experience, and one that, like, when you see the crowd, like, just are like, I've never had an experience of a crowd just like being absolutely still when someone is singing. There's just no one moving, you know, everyone's eyes are locked on them, and like, it's just it's a very contemplative experience. So that was what kind of got me rolling on the Penny and Sparrow bandwagon.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, especially. I think anytime, like any concert you've ever been to where, like, especially if it's like a rock band of any kind and then they go play acoustic or they like need to breathe, they'll do this sometimes where they'll all be around like one mic and play a song acoustically. And there's a silence, right? Silence in the crowd that, again, like we think of Christian life, silence is where we encounter God in prayer, right? You have to quiet your hearts in order to hear the voice of God. And so I think there's something similar happening in that contemplative, in that softer style of music that cultivates, I think, a certain silence in your heart. And then also not silence. I mean, I think of while we're talking about Need to Breathe, I just I'll never forget, like, when they played at Seek. Were you all there when they played at Seek?
I was there. Were you there, Brandon?
No.
Bro, man, you missed the greatest concert of all time. Because there were, I mean, there was like 17,000 people at Seek that year. This was maybe 3 years ago. And they played a set. They played their opening set, and people were going crazy. Like, everybody knew Need to Breathe at Focus for whatever reason. And Bear, the lead singer, his name's Bear. They're named after the two guys who were in it, the brothers who started it. Are Bo and Bear, but they were named after like Paul Bear Bryant. So I think Bo's first name is Paul or something. But anyway, yeah. Sorry, tangent. But Bear, the lead singer, gets on the mic and he says, "I'm gonna be honest. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves into tonight, but this is quite possibly the loudest crowd we've ever played in front of." And I was like, wow.
Everyone awesome. Proceeded to be just as loud as they had been, huh? If not louder, I bet.
Yeah, probably a little louder. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. So, yeah, I think music has – I mean, but I think it's also important to notice to maybe in kind of closing on music, to realize that we have to be careful not to fall into idolatry too. And I think that can be a temptation in like rock concerts in particular, right, is to stop at the band and to more or less worship the band or to worship the music rather than let that be a bridge to the divine. Is that fair to say?
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple more artists I just want to recommend. Dermot Kennedy has some super profound stuff. And then Justin Bieber's been having a conversion, and we can tell.
The Biebs.
We can tell in his secular, right. Pop albums that are, biggest in the world right now. Yeah. You can tell.
If you have $5 more, I'll let the audience know that there's a couple, at least one or two articles on Justin Bieber in the website too.
And I also want to mention Pinion Sparrow too.
All right, we're cutting that out. All right, so I think the last one we want to touch on is probably not where people would expect, but I think that I know Nick has some particular insight for. I'm sure you do too, Brennan. Comments on this, but actually sports as a mode of entertainment that very much fits into this category of being able to be a bridge to the divine. Mm. So why do you guys think sports can be powerful as well?
Go ahead, Brennan.
Well, so I think for me, sports have a really just profound way of reminding me that I'm capable of hard things. I think that's often a big takeaway. Mm-hmm. For me from sports. Literally just yesterday I was watching the US Olympic trials are going on for track and field. And just yesterday I watched a little clip of this girl who made the Olympic qualifying standard in the 5K, and she did it all alone. Like, she was kind of way ahead of the field. Cause they just needed qualifying places, not the time, but she needed the time. And anyways, and I was just like, I was tearing up watching this woman just like run around a track by herself. And I was like, why is that happening? And it's because she was like putting her best on the line and seeing what happened, and doing a really hard thing. You could see on her face, she was not comfortable doing this. And it just reminded me, I'm capable of hard things. I'm made for something more than just comfort. Like, I'm made for greatness. And so when I see people give their best on the line, and particularly in, maybe running or swimming, kind of like racing sports like that. I just get to, I put my best here. You put your best here. We'll just see who's better. And it's all about like the preparation and the excellence and the discipline that goes into that. And so that's always very inspirational for me.
Amen. Yeah, maybe a couple of things for me. I'm a one thing is I'm a soccer coach. Big thing is I get to witness the players that I coach. Do hard things all the time. And I also get to witness them say no to doing hard things. All the time, kind of my role as a coach is to inspire them to do those hard things, in a certain sense, or to help them when they, when they don't, to help them get back up. I just remember a particular example of my older girls soccer team that I coach. We won two club state titles in a row, but the first one, I just remember being like, so they came to the, the Final Four weekend or whatever, where we played the semifinal and the final. And I mean, we won pretty big both games, and I just remember them coming into that weekend, and they just played soccer 90-minute games. They played 180 minutes of just like determined, focused soccer, like for the pretty much the entire 180 minutes. And I just remember how moved I was at the end of that tournament. Just like how, just to see them all lock in like that together, get to accomplish something like that together, something difficult, you know, that they just decided as a unit that they were, that's what they were going to do for 180 minutes of that weekend. Just like, it just reminded me of our heavenly journey, you know, and how relatable like a sports season is to the faith journey, you know, it just, the celebration that ensued afterward when they'd accomplished their goal just reminded me so much of the, like, the heavenly joy that we'll experience when we accomplish our goal, you know, God willing. So the season, the, like, a sports season and, you know, walking through that with these players is very much like an analogous way to experience the faith journey, you know, which I absolutely love.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a better, I mean, I'm sure there's a better way, but there, it's a really good way to cultivate virtue, through sports. I mean, I'm just thinking of, as a teacher, like, try to imagine a high school without sports and how, like, lame and, like, dead of a high school that would be. You know, like, sports, I think, are really a way that we can, especially for youth, I think, come alive and live fully alive. And that's what we're called to do in Christ, especially. So I think there's something there, absolutely. I think I know something we've talked about, Nick, in particular, is like a certain beauty there is in sports. I remember talking one night, gosh, it was like me, you, and Daniel, I think, over a pipe, and we were talking about the beauty of a slam dunk, even.
Oh, LeBron James, y'all. LeBron James.
No, that's all I was gonna say. I mean, there's just like, there's certain, and it's really hard to articulate as clearly, I think, as you can with music or with movies, but like, there's like, people will just watch replays of like a diving play or of a slam dunk over and over, right?
Let me just say where I have to get my LeBron James plug in. But there's more to this than just the beauty of the play, I have to say. But I still watch. So in 2016, I'm a big LeBron fan, everyone. Okay, hate mail goes to Dylan.
Wait, why would they send me hate mail if... they don't like
just
you.
Because that's where the hate mail goes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, anyway, I remember in 2016, LeBron, Cavaliers against the Warriors. I won't go into the details of the story or whatever, but game 7, game on the line, Cavaliers down by 2, a minute left or whatever. Warriors are going in for a layup to go up by 4. So that would kind of put it a little bit out of reach. And I just remember LeBron soaring in out of nowhere. Comes flying in from half court. Or he sprints from half court. Comes just... like soaring into the backboard, and he just makes this incredible block against the backboard to block the layup and keep the game within 2. I still watch that play. Like I do. I turn it when I'm, you know, again, that's like the Kung Fu Panda thing for me. When I need some pick me up, I turn that replay on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the standard of living. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the standard of how to live, you know. There's more to it than this, right? LeBron coming to bring a title to Cleveland or whatever. But, like, just the determination. And, like, just to see him rise up. Look at his head's above the rim. His arm is, like, a mile above the rim. He's, like, 6'9". And can jump 80 inches or whatever. Yeah. He's like Space Jam, really. No, but just to see him, like, watch him do that play and to hear the announcer go, like, wow, unbelievable. You know, just there's something amazing and beautiful about that that just strikes the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean – I don't know about the listeners to this podcast right now, but I mean, my heart, like, they're, you know, does my heart not burn within me? That's what I'm experiencing right now. Like hearing you talk about that player, you're talking about your soccer team, Nick. And then going back to what you said, Dylan, about like, this is just like the way to live, like become who we are. And like, Nick, you said the standard of living. I don't know. Like, it's just making me ask myself, you guys just sharing these moments in sports. Like, yeah, what's the greatness that I'm called to, you know, what's the basketball I'm called to block against the backboard, you know?
Yeah. Right, that's right. You need to work on your vertical, that's for sure.
Yeah, that is for sure. I tried a backflip the other day and totally ate it because I didn't get high enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a certain, like, there's a certain connection with freedom, too. Like, I think in my own experience, like, I can't think of any times where I felt more free than, like, when I was just having fun playing a sport that I love or even, like, playing guitar, right? And, you know, even these things, like, they're difficult at first. Like if you're learning guitar, it's not exactly freedom. You don't feel very free. You feel like you're trying to like really work at something that's very difficult, right? But once you can play a song, like, you're free to play a song. You know, I think there's something in the Christian conception of virtue and where, you know, like, we are, you know, the Christian idea of freedom is we're not free when we're in sin, right? We're free when we are free to do what we ought, because we have trained ourselves and habituated ourselves using the grace of God, right? We've habituated ourselves to virtue. I just think sports and even music, anything that requires this discipline to excel at, I think is a really good example of that, how that can actually make us more free.
Amen.
So awesome. I really like this. I really like what we have here.
You think we'll publish it, or?
We might have to edit out the parts where Brennan talked. No, just kidding. You're a guest. We love you, Brennan. But do you have anything else on More Than Entertain you want to say in closing, leave our listeners with? Again, $5 more if you reference an article.
Yeah. Well, I would just say, maybe I'll share how we came up with the name More Than Entertained and close with that. So we were wrestling with like a couple names, you know, this time last year. And I recalled a conversation I was having at our Focus missionary training in summer of 2019. We were at a table with a few people and we were talking about, you know, whatever, a couple movies or something. And this girl, Becca, you know, said, she's like, yeah, I don't want to be merely entertained. And I just remember being so struck by that. And then, you know, so flash forward, I guess about a year after that, and just throwing around some names for this project, this website that we have, and saying, yeah, we don't want to be merely entertained. Let's be more than entertained. And so just want to, remind the audience that we are made to be more than entertained. And so let's not settle for mere entertainment.
Wow, that's inspiring. I love that. I'm gonna pray with that.
Cool. Wait, should I? I guess I'll pray with it too.
Yeah, so okay. We'll pray together.
Okay.
All right. Well, Brennan, thank you so much for coming on our show. Again, check out, listeners, we really want to encourage you to check out More Than Entertain, the website. Is it every week you have new
every
articles?
Week. Mm-hmm. Every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should I also do a plug if you want to submit an article? They take guest submissions.
Yes, we would love to have you.
I've done that actually.
Yeah, Dylan's had a great
deeper than the surfaces, baby. Yeah,
there you go. Check it out. I have to give you $5. <That was mine. laughs> But no, seriously, thank you so much for being with us. This was a really incredible conversation. We hope that you guys will have great conversations yourselves and always be more than entertained. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.